super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake. Mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Welcome to the Grindhouse. If I sound a little somber for this show, there is a good reason for it. Last weekend, I announced on the show the untimely passing of a good friend of the Grindhouse, Jamie Gillis. It was Thursday, February 19th, that Jamie Gillis lost his battle with cancer at age 66 and left us. To be blunt, we were floored. We were at a loss for words. We didn't know what to do. And then we were sort of pissed off, too, because there was no mention of Jamie in the mainstream press. And one thing about Jamie, he was Grindhouse all the way. Jamie was a trained actor. Jamie did wind up answering an ad in one of the underground newspapers in New York City and actually wound up doing loops on 14th Street in Bob Wolf's basement studio. Those loops segued into 16mm features. And then into 35mm features. Then there's some roles into some mainstream films like Sylvester Stallone's Nighthawks, where he did a walk-on, and Joel Reed's Night of the Zombies, where he played the lead. Jamie was a consummate professional, both on and off the camera. He gave a searing intensity to the roles he played, whether they be sexual, non-sexual, whatever. Jamie was a presence to be dealt with on the screen in the 70s and 80s, when, you know, porn was in its prime, shall we say. Jamie was an actor, first and foremost, as most of the people who were in those films, because he had to have a mokum of acting ability to get by. Jamie had more than a mokum. Jamie was believable. Jamie made you believe whatever he was doing. This is not a wake for Jamie, don't get me wrong. We are here to pay respect for Jamie, to tell how Jamie affected our lives in some different ways. I mean, I have a bunch of people coming on, Keith Crocker, Rob Housechild, Don Wilson, Lee Peterson, hopefully Carter Stevens, Mike Razzo from Pop Cinema, and a bunch of others. And we're here tonight to celebrate the life of Jamie Gillis. Even though he did leave us way too soon, we respected the man, we admired the man, and tonight we pay tribute to Jamie Gillis, the person.
The Pleasure Palace. Now, Carter Stevens takes you inside a real massage parlor. Meet the girls of the Pleasure Palace.
This young lady in the black is Jeannie, and that voluptuous blonde is Carol.
You found an investor.
Get to know what running a massage parlor is really like.
You know what I mean?
Let Carter Stevens guide you through the sexiest establishment you ever visited. Pleasure Palace from Carter Stevens. Featuring Jamie Gillis, the hottest stud in adult features. And Serena, famed cover girl in centerfold. Serena, the most beautiful, lusty, sensuous star in adult films. The Pleasure Palace from Carter Stevens. Don't miss it.
How about a big bag of Skittles? Lemon, lime, grape, watermelon. Oh!
Jackalope 105 FM.
Well, we're joined by my good buddy Rob Housechild from Wild Eye Releasing. Rob was sort of instrumental in getting Jamie back into the public eye for a while at the Pioneer Theater and up at Cinema Wasteland. So, Rob, welcome back to the Grindhouse.
Hey, guys. It's good to be back with you. I wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, I know. I'm still all fucked up over this thing. It
is disturbing. It really is.
Yeah, that's what we're not having a wake here or anything. We're here to show respect. Respect, unfortunately, the mainstream media has yet to be given out. And you know, it's funny. I remember I didn't know Jamie till, you know, we guys started hooking up. And the funny part was when I put out 8mm Madness Part 1, I got an email on MySpace and it said, "Hey, fella, can I get a copy of that? You know, want to see how the old gang's doing?" And it was signed Jamie Gillis. And I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, everybody's posing for everybody. But it actually was him, so I referred him to Razzo. So that's actually the first time I had met him.
That sounds like Jamie.
That's my first Jamie story.
There's still no Obit in the New York Times.
There isn't?
No.
Girls for Rent, a story as bold as the headlines flashing across our country today, telling of girls available for any purpose to those who have the rental fee. It all starts with a prison camp bust out from a hellhole where women are treated like dirt. Everybody's heard about Linda Lovelace, Marilyn Chambers, and Georgina Spellman, the screen's erotic queens. And now you can see Georgina Spellman, star of The Devil and Miss Jones, at a theater near you in Girls for Rent. What you see on the screen in Girls for Rent is actually happening in the United States today. This motion picture smashes open the dirty world of politicians, party girls, massage, and murder. It was too hot to tell before, but now the lid is off. Looking for some action? The organization's gals have got it in Girls for Rent. Hot-blooded, hot-lipped, and hot-rodding down the highways. These girls can handle any man and any set of roaring wheels. Get ready for something new. Girls for Rent.
We are now joined from the West Coast by the legendary Georgina Spellman, who had been on our show before, and she had mentioned she had some memories of Jamie, so I invited her back on to, you know, share some of those memories. Welcome back, Georgina.
Hi, how are you, Pete?
Oh, good. Yourself?
Oh, just great, just great. I can't believe how good I am. I mean, it's terrible when people that are younger than you start, you know, hopping the big 747. Jamie Gillis. God, the most gorgeous, the matinee idol of the business, definitely. And I asked a friend of mine who's a film critic that writes for several e-zines and stuff, David Namat is his name, I said, you know, I don't know what to say about Jamie. And he said, well, here is a review I wrote. Why don't you read this? So I'd like to do that if you got a minute.
Sure.
Okay. He's talking about, he primarily, this reviewer is primarily into horror films, and rather than, you know, like necessarily porn. When I first met Jamie, I was just floored. He was, you know, really the most gorgeous guy in the business, as there were so many wonderful. Okay, it was called Through the Looking Glass. It was made in 1976. He says, one look at this film and you'll see how great an actor Jamie Gillis was. In Through the Looking Glass, 1976, a beautiful heiress named Catherine spends much of her time admiring herself in an antique mirror. When she's drawn through the looking glass, she finds herself trapped in a bizarre, X-rated variation of Alice in Wonderland, where her late father, who's played by Jamie Gillis, awaits her. It's all a setup. Dad is really a demon, slowly pulling Catherine into a demonic netherworld where she will spend eternity for the sin of vanity. The film is generally terrifying. Gillis, as a demonic dad, is superbly chilling. His facial expressions harken back to the glory days of Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi. He's nothing less than hypnotic. When he's first seen in the mirror with green-tinted skin, it's as good as anything you might see in a mainstream horror film. And Looking Glass, first and foremost, is a horror film, a ghost story, a tale of demons from the other side, and Alice in Wonderland reimagined. The film was released in both hard X and R versions. Even as an R-rated film, though, The Looking Glass holds up. It's got a cohesive story and a defined beginning, middle, and end, fully developed characters. Years from now, it may stand as the one film that proves Jamie Gillis a very real acting talent. And this is the thing that I loved so much about Jamie. He was a consummate actor. You know, just gorgeous, but what an actor. And that's about all I got to say.
And you said it all. He was an actor, and people, you know, some a lot of people didn't see that, but you know, you did, we did, and that's why we loved him. And
Oh, God, yeah.
this just comes out of left field. It's, you know, I'm still in shock. I really am.
Well, don't be, because it just happens, you know, and it's going to continue happening. And we've lived through, I have lived through the most wonderful age in the most wonderful place on this planet. I can't believe how lucky I was to be born in Houston, Texas, you know, to grow up in this country during these wonderful, wonderful years. I don't know what's happening now or what's going to happen in the future. It's kind of all, I mean, the wheels are coming off all over the place. We all know that. And I just keep, I keep reading the Desiderata. You know, it ends up with no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. I kind of have to keep trying to believe that. And since I just don't know what I can do about it. But I do know that, I have a backyard where the ashes of some very, very dear friends who've preceded me, including the dog of one of my dear friends, are scattered. And I have imaginary conversations with all of them, and I don't start them. And yes, they are imaginary. I don't hear voices or anything like that. But I hear from, you know, Jane Hamilton of Veronica Hart, her husband, Michael Sirigliano, who is a very close friend of mine, big old biker dude, great, talented guy. I hear from him all the time. I haven't heard from Jamie yet. I don't know whether it's because he's on the East Coast or whether he's just got a lot to do before he gets around to saying hello to me. But I'm sure I will, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah, really is.
That really is. That's you know, that's very inspiring.
Yeah, you know, this is just a vacation spot along the way. There's so much more that went on before we got here. There's so much more that's going to go on after we're here. You know, however you want to look at it, if you want to get fundamental, God wouldn't go to this much trouble if it was for this just this little short period of time.
Wow.
It's just, you know, it's part of something else.
I agree.
That I don't pretend to understand.
Yeah, neither do I. But, you know, it's, the ride was fun so far. I'll give it that, you know. That's probably how Jamie felt, too, because, you know, we were sort of like, you know, a little extended family out here for a while, just hanging out with him, got him out to the convention and stuff, and he really was having a good time. And, you know, just, you know, like...
I wish I had been that close with him. I wasn't, you know. I only probably... saw Jamie in person 3 times in my life. I'm very glad I got to speak to him. I got in touch with all the old guard, anybody who was mentioned in the book got a book. And then we, you know, I didn't check with them first. I just went ahead and wrote it and then sent it to them. I said, I hope you're not bothered by any of this. But he called me, and we got to talk, and I got to meet his wife, and I was just so thrilled at what they were into with the restaurants and everything, and they were so jazzed with what they were doing. And that made me feel real good.
Well, Georgina, we're going to let you go because we got to call some other people, too. But I really thank you for coming on and sharing with us. And we're going to put this on Saturday.
Thank you so much for reaching out and for giving me the opportunity to spout off. You know, I love to do that.
It was our pleasure. Our pleasure indeed.
We love having you.
Yeah.
Take care, guys.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Is Lee there?
Yeah, Lee's right here.
Why don't we put Lee on?
Call him. You got his number?
Well, he's standing right fucking next to you, isn't he? All right.
Hello.
Lee.
How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, he couldn't hand you the fucking phone, cheap bastard that he is.
Yeah. my ego is so big. I know.
You're president of a company and
now,
shit like
that. Now,
we are joined by the former and best manager of the Pioneer Theater in New York, which unfortunately is no longer with us, Lee Peterson, who had Jamie appear there, actually, on our various porn outings. He was at our very first one. Welcome to the Grindhouse, Lee Peterson.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, our pleasure. Why don't you tell us your Jamie story, or your memory of Jamie, your fondest memory of Jamie?
My fondest memory. Well, the way the Pioneer thing started was you and I were talking about doing a porno night, showing some trailers and showing a movie and stuff like that at Pioneer. And then I met Joel Reed, director of Bloodsucking Freaks, who also directed Jamie in a film called Night of the Zombies. I was talking to Joel about it, mentioned we were going to do this porno thing, and he said, oh, you know what, you should call Jamie Gillis. He's local. I got his number. So he gave me Jamie's number. The next day at work, I called Jamie, left a long message saying, you know, would you come out? At this point, it was more or less just going to, I was asking him to do like a Bob Hope cameo, like he would pop in and say hello, and then that would be it. I took a little convincing, but he said, sure, he did it. And as you know, it was a great night. He ended up talking for about an hour, answering questions and soaking it all up. Then selling him on the convention was a little bit more difficult. The way that came about is we were talking about possibly doing a DVD of Night of the Zombies with he and Joel. And then to sort of promote that, we wanted to bring he and Joel to Cinema Wasteland. And anyway, the DVD fell apart, but we continued with the promotion of the convention. It took him a long time to finally say yes. He was going back and forth, back and forth. Now, you know, in light of what happened, it kind of makes sense. I think he was, you know, he was looking at his own mortality. He was looking at, it was, I think, in January, we were planning for an October show, so he already knew at that point that didn't have too much longer.
And he kept saying, you know, well, I'll let you guys know, like in August, I'll let you guys know, you know, he really close to when the show was happening, you know, for the confirmation. So he was playing it by ear.
Yeah,
it makes sense now. It was pretty infuriating at the time, going back and forth, back and forth. He was a little distrustful of our motives. He thought maybe we were trying to take advantage of him, whatever. But yeah, I mean, that's an experience I wouldn't trade for anything in the world. I mean, we spent 4 days with the guy, two very long 10-hour drives. I wouldn't say that I got to know Jamie, but I feel like I got to know him as well as you could get to know a person in 4 days, and I certainly considered him my friend afterwards. So, yeah, I mean, I miss him, and I... Gosh, it was like a punch in the gut when I heard this news. I didn't believe it. For hours, I didn't believe it.
Mike Razzo was supposed to be on, but he's stuck in a blizzard somewhere. Oh, I know where it is. It's right here. Who am I shitting? This is fucking ridiculous. But he sent me a press release to read, and it says right here, a day doesn't go by that I'm not dealing with some piece of media that features Jamie Gillis. The find of a decade was when I located Jamie's lost 1973 film, Come and Be Purified, where Jamie plays a phony priest who sets up a religious scam to get laid, directed and co-stars Sean Costello. We recently shot an interview with Jamie that will appear on the March 23rd release of Joe Sarno's Abigail Leslie and Laura's Toys double feature DVD. He was so enthusiastic and excited about all these restored classics about to be released by After Hours Cinema. All of us here at the studio are shocked and saddened by the loss of Jamie. Sincerely, Mike Razzo and the staff of Alternative / Pop Cinema. So, Mike, you're out there in the blizzard. I hope you can get home and hang in there, big guy. You know, we're pulling for you here. Lee, thank you for sharing it with us. We're gonna call a couple other people, and we thank you for coming on. And I'll catch up with you soon, dude.
Okay, man. Take care.
You too.
All right, Lee.
Pete, we've got Keith Crocker and Carter Stevens here.
Hello, Todd. Always good to hear you.
Oh man, definitely, man. Good to have you guys on.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we had Georgina on before, and we just had Lee on, and you know, now it's your guys' turn, you know, to share some stuff about Jamie. I mean, you know, this thing still hit me like a ton of bricks, you know, and makes you aware of your immortality and shit, you know.
Well, there's no question about that. It's like a sucker punch to the stomach, you know. It really is, because it was so unexpected, because we really had no clue, we had no inkling. So when it hits you like that, it kind of knocks the air out of you.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jamie was the first person in porn I ever met. I have a lot of fond memories of him, the last of which was about a year ago, last time I saw him.
He was quite a character. I'm sure Rob will elaborate a little bit, but, you know, Pete, when we were dealing with Jamie, in the past, I don't know, I guess you say, you know, past 6 to 9 months, he, like I said, there was no inkling that the man was ill. He was in good spirits. He seemed extremely fit. He also looked well. So, you know, to his credit, he never played a sympathy card. He never said a thing about being ill. And
thanks,
I think that's what makes him stand out is that, you know, we couldn't do anything for him. And it changes a person's attitude. When somebody's dying and they tell you they're dying, it changes your attitude toward them. You know, and I think it's great that he had the power to not say anything. I think it says so much for his character. And it took me a day to realize that, because when I first found out through Rob, I was sucker punched. Didn't expect it. Felt very uncomfortable for about a day. Then when I realized how brilliant it was, that he actually didn't say a thing and he went out with such dignity, I was really impressed. I know it sounds odd, but it's true. He actually impressed me with his professionalism. So, you know, to his credit, you know.
Well, he was the ultimate professional. That's one thing.
That's
I
for
would
sure.
From him.
Yeah, that's for no. sure. Rob, what was your feelings on this? Do you agree?
You know, that's a double-edged sword for me, because there's part of you that says, well, I wish I could have said goodbye to the man. You know, we were kind of, you know, we had these experiences together, and, you know, there was a bonding there, and I felt like, you know, that ultimately it's his choice, but there was a selfish part of me that said, you know what, I'd like to have said goodbye and maybe spend, you know, some more time with him, you know, maybe there's something to do to help him and Zarella during that time. I don't know. You know, there's part of you that wants to be there for someone when they're
well. You know what my feeling was, Rob, after he went, was I agree with you partially on that, in the sense that I wish I could have given him more time. My feeling was that since there was nothing wrong with this man and he had no particular bad habit that could possibly cut his life short, my feeling was there was no need to keep up on him, that I was going to see him again. So I think you know, we missed out on some valuable opportunities there, because there was a lot I still wanted to talk to him about, and I felt like I really bonded with him well when we interviewed him and even prior to the interview. So it was kind of, yeah, there was definitely an element of letdown, because there was more to be talked about, you know?
Well, I think there was something about, you know, this guy's going to live forever, you know what I mean? He was the ultimate man of leisure, you know?
Right.
He just appeals to that part of you, just so carefree and just going through life. He was almost like some kind of Zen Buddhist or something, you know, sitting in a chair all day, just stargazing, you know? He had this sense about him that was so calm.
Right,
and it just made you feel comfortable with him, and it didn't, you know, it didn't feel like, oh, this guy's, you know, he's going to go any second now. You know, you run into people like that, you're like, oh my God, you're like, you know.
Well, my remembrances of Jamie are all from the early years. I mean, we went through a lot together. I mean, like I say, he was the first person I ever met in porn. He was one of my favorite actors. I worked with him a lot. He was always a consummate professional. We hung out a lot. We were, you know, good friends. And he was a hell of a guy. He could move through social strata very easily. He hung out with people. I don't know if you've seen her article, but Gail Green, the famous food critic, wrote a piece on her blog today about him, because she and he were close. But he was that kind of a person. He could go, you know, hang out with a gourmet and hang out at the racetrack and hang out with the porn people. And he could move through those worlds very easily without any effort.
Yeah, that's not an easy, and that's, I don't think that's an easy thing for most people to do. I think it takes kind of a somewhat special person to be able to do that. And I did feel when I met him that he could talk to just about anybody. I didn't see him have, you know, any sense about him where he was, you know, put off by anybody or willing to put anybody off. I think he pretty much would talk to anybody who was willing to talk to him. And I think, you know, the fact that he can get in and out of circles like that really means a hell of a lot. Really does.
Yes, absolutely.
And he could talk about any subject, having been trapped in the car with him for almost 20 hours. I mean, you start talking about, you know, lint in your pocket after a certain point when you're on a road trip. And he, you know,
very intelligent, highly intelligent man. He was totally unique.
I mean, he used to quote me. I in some interview somewhere, I once said that there were four types of people in the porn business. There was heterosexuals, homosexuals, bisexuals, trisexuals, and then, of course, there was Jamie Gillis. And he took that as a compliment, which it was.
Right.
He was a totally unique individual. I read a lot after his death about him being a misogynist and rough with women and all of this crap. But the truth is that all a woman had to do was look at him cross-eyed, stare him down, and he would just as happily drop to his knees and lick her boots.
You know, he was very
comfortable going either way.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing that you bring that up, because when he was talking to me about his tough guy routine, he viewed it as acting. He didn't say it was anything more than what it was. It was a part of a persona. It might have been also a fantasy of his, but that can go that way, especially with people who are somewhat into S&M. They're going to, you know, it's role playing. And right. I think that's what he did. And before I had met him, I had been a little, I had been poisoned in certain ways by reading certain things about him that were written by people who really didn't like him all that much. And they had painted a pretty poor portrait of him. And and before I had met him, I wasn't really sure what kind of a man this was going to be. When I finally did meet him, the truth was unveiled. I realized this was a decent, you know, this is actually a very decent man. That was my feeling. That was the feeling I got, you know. I don't know if anyone else has a different story, but my feeling was...
No, that's why I was so lucky, because I knew him before anybody ever wrote anything about him.
Right.
I mean, we were both brand new into the business.
Right, right.
You know, and we, you know, we hung out together, and, you know, Sean Costello and he and I, you know, would chase women together, and I mean... had a hell of a time.
Right.
I mean, we enjoyed ourselves.
Right.
I mean, I think that was the biggest thing that, Boogie Nights missed, was the fact that we were having so much fun.
Right. Yeah, you know, absolutely. Sure, that was the part they didn't investigate. Yeah, that was
right.
The part they didn't bring up. Yeah, sure.
The 70s were fun. There was no doubt about it. What would you say, Carter, one time, if we remember the 70s, we weren't there?
Right. If you remember them... If you remember them correctly, or you weren't there.
Yeah.
I sort of remember them hazily.
Yeah, I have to say, I get these little flashbacks here and there. It's wonderful.
What was your, I'm sure you've already said it, but what was your feelings on Jamie with having met him and been with him on several occasions and doing stuff, you know, what are your feelings about him? How did he resonate with you?
Well, like you, I had heard all the negative shit, you know, and then he had, like I said before, he had contacted me on MySpace when I put out my first 8mm collection about, you know, wanting to see the loop and stuff, so I forwarded it to Mike Razzo, and he got it, and then you were at the Pioneer, that's where I first met him, he walked up, and he said, oh yeah, 42nd Street Pete, oh this and that, so yeah, it was cool, we got along, we were, basically, we were up at Cinema Wasteland at Thursday night, we were holding down furniture in the bar, you know, we were having a great time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
He was a hell of a guy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Not what you expected. I think that's what made it so exciting when you finally did meet him. It's like, oh, wow, this is really interesting, because you're really seeing, again, a person who I think thought of himself as an actor. Not to say that Jamie took himself too seriously, because he didn't. He would scoff sometimes about, one of the funny things he said to me was he was talking about the adult video awards that he used to win and that type of thing, and he was saying that he was kind of laughing about it. He said, you know, I really didn't have much competition. What was my competition? A German Shepherd.
German Shepherd came in second. That was
right. Exactly.
And then didn't he say something, Keith, about it? You know, how he'd like walk off stage and give it away to somebody or something. You know, it was such a, you know.
Yes, that was exactly what was said. Rob, you're right. That's what he was talking to us on that day. He was saying that it really didn't matter all that much to him, and in fact, it was his, if I'm not mistaken, his sister held on to everything for him. He didn't exactly see the value in it, and his family members were grabbing the stuff up and still had it for him, and he was appreciating it now. At this point now, he was happy that the people held the things for him. Another interesting thing that he did with me was he had mentioned the death, and this is really ironic and bizarre, but he had mentioned the death of someone he knew, I believe it was a female, and he was talking about how she died from cancer, and he kept saying that he kept wishing that it would have gone into remission. Now that
I know he died from cancer, and then hearing him tell this story about someone else, I mean, it's really pretty interesting, you know, because, you know, in some ways, you know, he wasn't referring to himself, but in some ways, you know, you almost feel like maybe he was, you know, it was very interesting. It was
earlier days, happier days. I got to tell you the story about how I first met Jamie. I was brand new into the business. I went to do my first loop as an actor. Now, I had never done a loop. I'd never done anything on film. And now here I was going to go have sex on film. I get to this apartment. It was in the Upper West Side. I honestly don't remember ever meeting the people who were making the loop before. I must have, because they hired me, but I got there, I don't know. But I walked in, and they said, you know, have a seat in the living room. And it was one of these typical New York apartments, you know, the living room and the kitchen were all one. And they went into the bedroom to finish doing what they were doing. And I went into the living room. And I had brought a book because somebody had told me, you know, bring a book because you'd be sitting around a while. And there was this guy sitting there. And, you know, we said hello, you know, a Jewish-looking guy, you know. So, a Lonsman. So we started talking. And eventually we ran out of small talk. And I started reading. And I noticed that he is sort of picking through the clothing of the people who were in making the loop before us. And he finds this pair of panties, women's panties, and he starts sniffing them. And he's sniffing these panties, and he's sort of rubbing himself. And I'm trying to be real cool and read this book, right? In the meantime, I mean, things like, you know, thoughts like, it's Alan Funt and Candid, somebody's got me on Candid Camera. This isn't real. I mean, nobody's that kinky. That was Jamie.
Method
he wasn't
acting.
Being kinky, he was just getting in the mood.
Yeah, method acting. He was getting ready to really, you know, he was becoming
right.
The role. That's what it was. Sure, absolutely. Absolutely, no doubt about it.
He enjoyed his work, and he threw himself into it, but he was an actor. You know, that's what a lot of people don't understand, is that having sex on film is acting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've had sex scenes with women who I was having an affair with at the time, and believe me, there is nothing there.
Right.
It's work.
Right.
It's very pleasant work,
right.
But it's still work.
Right. Yeah, that's what people don't realize, and I think part of that, too, is, you know, Carter, the whole difference is with you guys, you were in the actual film industry of porn where a story was being told. I think now the whole difference being that, you know, there's no attempt to tell a story, that it is just what it is.
Don't push the stories too hard. I mean,
it's gone back to loops.
We were making loops. There was a one loop with Jamie and I did. You want to hear a story? This loop consisted of Jamie and a girl on a bed, and they're making out. And I walk in a pair of overalls in bare feet because I didn't have any work boots. All I had was sneakers, so they had me in bare feet. I had a pair of overalls. I had a picture, a hammer, and a nail. And Jamie and this girl are going at it on the bed. I climb over them. I nail the nail into the wall over their head, at which point the girl grabs me and pulls me down. She starts giving me head. Jamie finishes, does his cum shot. We switch places. I start doing her. Jamie gets up. He puts on the overalls. He gets the picture. He hangs it over my head on the wall, and he exits. And I finish up my scene. That was the plot.
Oh, compared to today's videos, that's still a plot.
Yeah, actually, it's better. I was actually...
At least there's a sense of humor or something going on in there, you know?
I was riveted listening to this. I was just envisioning the whole thing.
Oh, man.
Good. Well, listen, I'm going to kick you guys off. You're going to call some more people, but I thank you both for coming on. And Carter, I'm going to get you on for a whole show. I'm trying to get you up to Wasteland, too, you know?
Anytime.
Yeah.
You know, I'm practically a hermit. I used to have a life. Now I have a computer.
Yeah, I know. The internet killed us all.
One thing I have to add, that I just got an email from a a female friend of mine, good friend, and she was talking about Jamie, and she said something that I really liked. She said, Jamie got her off more times than the men she knew in person. And that really struck me.
I think
he would have been really proud of that.
Yeah, he heard that somewhere. He's laughing right now.
He sure is.
Yeah.
All right, Pete, thank you very much. Very appreciated.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming on, man.
All right, you take care, Pete. Take care, Carter. I'll talk to you soon. And Rob,
absolutely,
I'll talk to you soon, too.
Okay, be well, too. Everyone.
Thanks,
be good.
Guys.
Bye. Bye-bye.
That was awesome.
They'll tire you out and tear you apart in a bedroom or in a brawl. They're hot, wild, and for hire. Girls for Rent. Trapped in the West's most deserted wastelands by killers who get their kicks out of hurting people. They call Girls for Rent to get the job done, from loose love to planned murder. Screeching, screaming, slashing, and shooting, they'll always get their man. Girls for Rent.
Jackalope 105 FM.
Okay, we are now joined by Art Ettinger, the editor of Ultraviolent magazine, and Jason Martinko, who is writing the definitive book on porn. It's not going to be a coffee table book. It's, and when you order it, a forklift's going to bring it in. And he also has made a film, Gone the Way of the Flesh, and Gone the Way of the Flesh too. Welcome to the Grindhouse, guys.
Thank you. What's happening?
Oh, we're just trying to share some memories of Jamie, you know.
Our heroes are all dropping like flies, aren't they? The last couple of years, it's been a fucking mess. Like, everybody's going away, you know. It's been a lot of losses, a lot of them, in just the last few years. It's really something.
Yeah, it really sucks. It's funny, I think I said this last week, but I'll say it again. The funniest thing that happened at the last Wasteland, aside from, you know, the hooker stories that you insist on me telling, was when you asked Jamie that completely straight up question, and he just turned around, he looked you right in the eye and goes, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Take it, Art. Tell some memories. I mean, I can't talk the whole thing.
Well, that was the only time I got to meet Jamie. Yeah. Was at Wasteland, you know, and it was just a handful of months ago in October. And, you know, no one really, there were people who knew he was sick. None of us knew he was sick, I don't think. I mean, I certainly didn't know he was sick. He didn't seem sick. And, you know, not only was that the last time a lot of people had a chance to meet him, that was the only time a lot of us had a chance to meet him. I mean, if it wasn't for that show, I would have never met him, you know, probably. And he was really down to earth, really friendly, and it was great to get to talk to him face to face and hear some stories from him in person. You know, he was a really, really good guy, and none of us really knew he was sick. You know, he was just kind of hanging out.
Over months, right to the end. I mean, up to, you know, 5 weeks ago, nothing, not a word. He didn't say anything to us.
Wow.
And Jason, you said he was helping you a lot, you were telling me.
Yeah, I'm going to miss him a lot because I talk to him all the time. Any little question I'd have with something with the book where I got stuck on something, I'd just, you know, write him or call him, and he always was willing to help or point me in the direction of where to find out what I was looking for.
And you said he's reprising his water power role in the last movie. You made a movie with him. Actually, this movie you're talking about would probably be his last film, correct?
I'm wondering if it is, yeah, his last role. But, yeah, we shot the footage in 2007. We went up to New York in his place. We shot it at his house. And it was really cool to hang out there. And he took us over to his girlfriend Zarilla's restaurant in Manhattan, and he bought us dinner there after we shot the scenes. So it was really cool.
Yeah, it's just a shame.
One of the things that really impressed me about him is, I mean, he was just like, he was so bright, you know, not to stereotype, but, yeah, you know, a lot of people in the adult industry, they might be colorful, they might be interesting, but he came off as, like, genuinely bright, like, sharp as a knife, you know? And, he was so with it, you know, and to think how sick he must have been when we were all meeting him, you know, he couldn't have been feeling that well.
Yeah. Yeah, anyone I've talked to that ever met him, they just light up when you mention his name. Everybody loved him. There's no doubt.
I was just, Jason, when's the last time you spoke with him?
Actually, I haven't spoken to him since Wasteland. I've written him a few times since then and hadn't heard from him. So I wondered what was going on.
Yeah, he was getting, he wasn't returning emails for a while or phone calls.
Yeah.
They started to withdraw a little bit, but, you know, I think he was invited to a show in Minnesota, right, Pete? That was the show?
Yeah, we were trying to get him down. Somebody had contacted me because they had Sega down there, and I thought, shit, he was in a ton of stuff with her, and I got a hold of the promoter, and he said, anything you guys need, I want to get him down here. And then, you know, Rob told me, you know, what did he say? He goes, I think my convention days are over.
He said, really, he said, I had a fantastic time meeting everybody and hanging out with you guys at Wasteland, but my convention career is over, basically.
Huh. So, yeah, and you had no idea what he was talking about.
No, you know.
It's like he enjoyed life. He loved life. He wasn't morose about it. You know, Keith and Carter Stevens were on before. And, you know, you have to give the man credit. He didn't want to burden anybody with it, and he, you know, he faced it like they all had to face it, I guess, you know. It's, you know, some people want to keep it private.
Yeah. That's it. And he lived more than his share of his life, you know. Like, that's one thing we should celebrate, is that he lived his life. He went through with a smile. He enjoyed himself. This man had a good time.
He was so happy-go-lucky, which is strange, because, I mean, some of his characters are so vicious. And then in real life, he's just this happy-go-lucky guy, you know? He's like, hey, I'm Jamie, you know? And like,
yep.
And then there he is, all mean on the street, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of
cool.
That's the typical.
Yeah, I had no idea what to expect when I went up to his house up in New York, and, you know, I just talked to him pretty much on emails. And I finally got there and knocked on the door, and I'm like, man, what's it going to be like in there? But it was awesome, yeah.
You know, some people confuse real-life persona with screen persona. Like, you know me, everybody who meets me expects the worst, and usually I give it to them, so I don't disappoint anybody, you know? But, well, listen, guys, we got to call a couple other people. It was great having you guys on. I'm going to get each on for a full hour to fuck around and, you know, go crazy.
No, it was great to be able to say a few words. Thanks for having us, and, everyone should be remembering Jamie, so...
Okay.
All right, take care
of you guys.
All right. See you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Awesome.
Okay, our next guest here is Don Wilson. Don was Jamie's handler up at Wasteland at convention. Don and Jamie became friends after they met at the Pioneer Theater in our our Summer of Sleaze Festival. Welcome to the Grindhouse, Don Wilson.
Thanks for having me, Pete.
How'd it feel to be a fluffer? I mean, handler. That's really good.
Yeah, Tom the fluffer.
Collecting the money, yeah.
Okay, that's not nice, Todd. You know, you're quiet for the whole show, and you jump in to break down the ball, which as it should be, maybe. But and Jamie probably would have done the same thing, because, you know, the thing with Don is Don's balls are easy to break. So.
That's because they're plastic. They're hooked onto a bottle.
Yeah, you know, we all got pretty tight with him, and you probably, you know, more than ever, because you drove all the way up with him. You know, you kept him entertained. You know, you fed him. You know, you were taking care of his table at, you know, the convention and everything. So, you know, got any cool? You know, there's supposedly a jar story or something that you told me about.
And Jamie lets you handle his money, which is very important to note. That was a big deal with Jamie, actually, handling the money. It, you know, so he didn't come on as a jerk. You know, it was just in it for the buck. So he could relate to the fans and just kind of soak in the whole experience.
Because I know Jamie had given you his credit card at one point, too.
Well, Jamie gave me his used credit card. I have it. I cherish it, you know.
Yeah.
I've been a Jamie fan since I was 12.
Yes, actually, the whole truth of the matter is what Don is saying is Don is like one of the uber fans. Don really loved Jamie as a performer, you know, as an actor and stuff like that. He just was like, you know, thrilled to meet him, and then they became friends, and it was like, you know, basically, I guess it was your childhood dream come true, for lack of better words.
It was, absolutely. You know, it was a total coincidence, too, because for years I'd been telling Rob, you know, you got to check this guy's movies out, you know, this guy's... You know, unlike anyone else, this is from a time when, you know, a male porn star could be a star, you know, and not just a dick. And Jamie was more than that, you know. He was more than just a dick. But Rob put this whole thing together, and we took Jamie to Ohio. It was about an eight-hour drive. And you really got a sense of the guy. I had met him once before, was very brief. But this time, you know, you got to see him in his element. We took a long car drive, and especially on the way up, he was very talkative and got into some crazy shit, you know. But my take on the guy was that he had a sensitive side. And when you got in close with him, he would open up.
Very generous guy.
The two of you were in the car, but you got any road stories? Because you were like, 2 hours ahead of me or something on the way up?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I'll tell you.
And that's only because I was drinking. If it wasn't, I would have beat you if I wasn't drinking, you know?
That's true. You had to play it safe.
Yeah.
No, driving through the heartland, you know, in PA and stopping at McDonald's, just guys coming in wearing camo and shit like that. And, you know, him just riffing on that, you know, the idea that everyone around us is probably, you know, conservative Christian. And here we are, you know, sharing McDonald's with, you know, porn God. That was pretty fun. But personally for me, it was when we were driving home, actually. Everyone was really tired. And everyone basically was asleep. It was my turn to drive. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning on a Monday morning. And I'm driving, Jamie's sitting next to me up front, and him and I just, we had about a 45-minute conversation, just really as if I had known the guy for a while, you know, and talked a lot about that Metasex article about him, you know, how much it had bothered him, and I, you know, his big thing was, obviously the Metasex article made it seem as if Jamie was spiraling downward, out of control, had a death wish, and my experience of Jamie was just the opposite. I mean, this guy was full of life, still looking to experience things and have fun.
Well, this dark side, you know, everyone talks about with him, which is something that's attractive about him as an actor, but it's just acting, you know.
Yeah, it's an act. Not, yeah.
You know, you know, we all thought, you know, I was like, oh, what the hell is this guy going to be like when you meet him? But, you know, that's an act, and, you know, a lot of us explore darker things in our lives, but we're not doing it on camera. That's how he chose to do it. It connected with, you know, the exhibitionism or whatever it was about him. But like Don's saying, you know, underneath that, you know, it's this teddy bear.
Don, thank you for being on, brother, and I hope to see you soon. We're going to be doing some shit, so what the hell, you know?
Thanks for having me, Pete.
Oh, my pleasure, dude.
Thanks,
I got
Don.
Some new releases. I got new releases I got to get to you, too. Okay, our last guest this evening is the promoter of Cinema Wasteland, my good buddy Ken Keish, who actually brought Jamie out for what turned out to actually be his last appearance. We're not lamenting that. We're just, you know, happy that he got out to meet all these fans. So welcome back, Ken Keish.
Hey, thanks, man. It's always nice to be here. And I don't look at it as his last appearance. I look at it as pretty much his only appearance.
Yeah, his first.
Yeah, that really bothers me because I know once he did the show, he was actually like looking forward to do some other shows right around. You know, I know he didn't like to fly and he wasn't big on traveling far, but he had a couple appearances close to home. So I was kind of rooting for him. He wasn't in it for the money, obviously, and he was looking to have a good time. I'm glad I gave it to him.
Oh, yeah.
You certainly did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really. I mean, you know, but you know what amazed me is I was talking about after he passed, me and my wife Pam were talking, and it was like, you know, he was all over it. Okay, I'll make it. And I'll be damned if he didn't make it. And he had a great time. I mean, like, I didn't have one.
And, you know, the funny part with, you know, being a character actor and stuff, Jamie probably could have been a real decent character actor.
Well, that's how he started. Remember, he started out as an actor, an actual actor on stage before he ever went into porn. Porn was just...
Yeah, pay the bills.
Hey, I admit it, I'm lazy and so are you. When you go for the money, you go for the money. But you got to admit, when you watched this stuff, at least there was an actor in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt.
He had some decent. He made some really bad movies decent, and he had some really good little roles in mainstream movies. He obviously invested his cash and was happy with life, and that's great. You know, isn't that where we all want to wind up at the end? You know, at the end of 365 days, at the end of the year, I just want more happy days than sad days.
But he was so funny out there because even with the panel, I mean, he was coming out with shit that, like, oh fuck, he's sitting next to Lynn Lowry, she must be like red as a beet from some of these comments that are coming.
Oh yeah,
out.
But the best part about her, she's a trooper too.
Yeah,
you know, she was brought up with obviously a lot of guys around her because she's good about it too. And
yeah, no, he's sitting there going, well, when you come in one twin, the other one gets jealous, you know?
Yes.
No, I'm sitting there going, I can't believe I'm hearing this shit. Hey, Bill, tell us about Stanley, you know?
You know what? Life is a few funny moments, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All strung together. Why be subservient in heaven when you rule in hell?
You do have my corner already paved out, right?
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. It's the dry corner with the fan.
Okay.
Hey, friends aren't hot in my corner, hell. We're the only place with air conditioning.
I can see this, the cinema wasteland, hell, the big fucking sign with the flame shooting at it. Shit.
Broken down couch and a 19-inch screen that barely gets the old movie you're watching so we can bitch about it. That's my hell. Yeah. Is it me, or do I always bring your show down to a drunken stupidity level?
That's why we saved you for last.
Yeah, but you know, if you catch me early, I'm sober. Yeah.
That's no fun.
You know, I work till 7. You can count on me.
Oh, you know something? Now, here's a wasteland moment and a Jamie moment. When Scotty, Trailer Park Scotty, Dumpster Scotty, whatever the fuck he's calling himself, Scotty Lynn walks up with the fucking enema bag on the fucking little roller for him to sign. That was the best.
Oh, yeah.
That's my Jamie Wasteland moment, other than holding down the
furniture. I call him Dumpster Scott. But that's Scott. Only because he's part of my stupid show. Scott Cunningham. Yeah, he told me the only thing he ever saw with Jamie in it was the enema bandit. And he's like, man, I want a colostomy bag, and he sent somebody out for one. That was a priceless moment, and it's a proud thing. I just talked to him earlier tonight and told him I was going to bring your shit on to a drunken level of, like, you know, an IQ of 64, and he said, man, I still got my colostomy bag. Like, who in the fuck even, I couldn't imagine not, like, taking a piss every 37 seconds after 22 light beers, so... Oh, his old lady's a nurse, so she had a big stack of them. They got all spread around. That's how that happened.
I thought they were going and buying them somewhere.
No, he told somebody else, and there's, like, you know, one of them supply stores by us. And, his old lady's an actual nurse. So she bought, like, all kinds of them, so everybody was getting it done.
I've never felt quite so clean as I do now. I've decided to equip myself, so I went to several stores and got myself more enema equipment. If this is to be my life's work, then I must be prepared for any eventuality which might arise. It's true that I have to clean these dirty whores out, but I also have to do it right. I can't just stick tubes up their asses and hope for the best. No, an enema is more meaningful than that. I see a whore and I clean her out. I know it sounds simple. Giving an enema is an important responsibility.
God, he hates
that. He was an unshockable man.
We're calling him that
from
now
on.
The man's never been inside of a dumpster, but we call him that. You know what? You guys got to call me earlier. I'm going to just... You know, you're going to quit calling me, aren't you?
No, we're going to call you later. We'll make it worse. We'll give you another hour.
Yeah. You're getting the snow out there? Are you in the middle of a fucking blizzard, too?
I don't care. I was born and raised in Cleveland. It's them fucking dothead bitches driving around that have no fucking clue because they're used to sucking sand their whole goddamn life. And they don't know how to drive in snow. It's like, stupid bitch, don't kill me. I should be allowed to take a shotgun out.
But what the fuck?
I don't care, man. Hey, I have no hatred toward dothead Indian people.
All right, we're gonna cut out now. Give me a call over the weekend. I'm snowed in, I guess. What the fuck, you know?
Someday you got a drunken snort.
That's awesome.
Man, fuck it. You know, someday I'm gonna come on this program sober.
No one will know what to think, and it'll be boring.
Well, we've actually had at least one sober conversation. It probably wasn't boring. It might have been the most interesting thing we had.
Yeah, the first one.
That was boring. Yeah.
Oh, fuck it. Well, people keep downloading the motherfucker, so how...
Hey, wait a minute. Todd got some digs in, man. You know, usually he's out there watching midget porn and never got a dig.
There's something new, but I'll clue you in on that later because we have to plan something.
Oh, you guys.
Yeah. Hey, let's say goodbye now. All
right. Okay.
Goodbye now.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Well, I guess we may as well wrap it up. I'm glad we got all these people on. I'm glad people shared, you know, a little respect for Jamie. And I really appreciate all this. Really appreciate the people coming on. And Rob, any closing thoughts from you? You know, you spent a lot of time with him.
You know, I feel privileged to have had the time, the way things worked out, to have spent, you know, some of the last few months talking to him, being able to hang out with him, being able to interview him. You know, get some of his thoughts on camera and on tape to hopefully share with people down the road. You know, he was a really great guy, and I will miss him, and I'm just glad I was able to meet him. And I'm glad you did this tonight, Pete, because this was a great thing. And like you said, they're, you know, mainstream coverage, forget about it. So we have to take it into our own hands. And
the man was a gifted actor. He probably could have been one of the better heavies in B movies or even A pictures for that matter. But, you know, he was happy with his lot, and that's what counted. And, you know, he I guess, you know, to me, he was a cool person. You know, I can only say God bless you, Jamie. May you rest in peace. And, you know, thanks to Ashley Spicer for alerting all of us to this, or we would have never known it. So we paid a lot of respect to the man, and all I can say is God bless you, Jamie. You gave us a lot of pleasure, a lot of fun. You know, you were a consummate performer, and you were a good friend. And we'll see you in the big grindhouse in the beyond, brother. Take care now. Stay sick.
Forty Second Street Pete's Grindhouse is a production of Jackalope 105 FM.
Do you feel that? Oh, shit. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Madness is the gift that has been given to me. I can see inside you the sickness is rising. It seems that all that was good has died. Oh no, the world is a scary place. Now that you've woken up the demon in me.
Bobby, will you give it to me?
2, 3, 4.
Oh.
Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Why can't you just fuck up and die? Get down with the sickness. Fuck you, I don't need this shit. I'm down with the sickness. You stupid, sadistic, abusive fucking organ. Down with the sickness. Here it comes. Get ready to die. Get ready to
die.
Come on, here we go again, motherfucker, yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on down and see the idiot right here, too fucked to beg and not afraid to care. What's the matter with calamity anyway? Right, get the fuck out of my face. Understand I can't feel anything. It isn't like I want to sift through the decay. I feel like a wound, like I got a fucking gun against my head. You live when I'm dead. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. Nobody hates me now, so fuck it. Blood on my face and my hands, I don't know why. I'm not afraid to cry, but that is none of your business. Overdo it, don't tell me you blew it. Stop your bitching and fight your way through it. I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die.